Thank you, members. We're now going to item 8.8, which is the workforce strategy, report by Gary Fairley.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. Members will recollect that a draft of the workforce strategy was presented to Council at this special meeting on the 10th of October. That recognised the importance of the link between the workforce strategy and the Council's financial strategy. The aim of the workforce strategy is to help ensure that Council continues to have a workforce that is able to deliver positive outcomes for Midlothian. The final strategy, which has been consulted on with recognised trade unions, sets out an approach to supporting, developing, reshaping the workforce in response to the changes, whether nationally or locally. Section 3 summarises the elements of the workforce strategy and the key themes that it encompasses. Today, alongside consideration of the workforce strategy, members are also asked to consider the trade union's request that there be elected member representation on the Lifelong Learning Committee. Council is recommended to consider representation and, if approved, appoint a representative. Deputy Provost, today Council is asked to consider the recommendations relating to the workforce strategy, which are set out in Section 6 of the report.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Any members have any questions? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I don't have any questions as such, but to thank Gary for bringing the full report back to Council. I've had a conversation with one of the trade unions just to make sure that they were consulted, because I know that was one of the questions that Councillor Parry had raised in the past, and I believe there's been discussions between HR and the trade unions about this document. And I note in the recommendations that there is a commitment to continue engaging with the trade unions on not just the corporate plan, but each of the service plans as well, which should be welcomed. I'll maybe leave it for other members to ask questions, but I'd be happy to endorse the recommendations in the report.
Thank you, Councillor Hackett. Any other members? Councillor Parry and then Councillor Small.
Small. Thanks, Deputy Provost. In respect of recommendation C is the point that I wanted to raise. I'm aware that there is good conversations going on between the unions and the council, so I'm told by them. However, it would be perhaps pertinent to have somebody who wasn't in the administration to be the representative on the Lifelong Learning Committee, and if that was approved by Council, I'd like to nominate Councillor Johnson to that post. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Smeal, my apologies.
I'm quite used to it. I was surprised, given the importance of the final salary pension scheme in Midlothian, that no mention of its place within a workforce strategy occurs. One of the areas where I think it can be helpful is if we use the flexibility to allow people to retire but at the same time work part-time for us. There may be a win-win situation for those in their 50s, which appears to be quite a lot of the workforce. I just wondered, Gary, if you could comment as to any possible strategic use of our pension asset as part of workforce incentivisation and flexibility.
Yep. So just for a matter of record, we've no longer got final salary pension scheme for local government workers, certainly. It moved to career average. I suppose what the workforce strategy looks at mainly is those areas which are under our direct influence and control that we can shape and change through local policies and local working. The pension regulations are set nationally, but as Councillor Smale highlights, those do provide a route to flexible retirement for staff, and that's certainly something in terms of our workforce change that we'd utilise. Where certain members of staff, we do already have a flexible retirement policy where members of staff can retire, access a pension and return, but can only return to a job without a reduction in salary or a reduction in hours, a significant reduction.
Councillor Muirhead. Sorry, I'll bring Mr. Councillor Smeal in later.
Just simply say, I meant to say defined benefits, which covers both a career average and final salary.
Deputy Provost. I was waiting until we had agreed the recommendations before moving somebody, but I'd like to move Councillor Hackett for the position on the Lifelong Learning Committee. I I think there's been a suggestion that it might be okay to have two members in that committee. Is that?
Anyone answer that question? Is allowed two local members on the Lifelong Learning Committee?
Deputy Provost, certainly the trade unions asked for our representative. I haven't spoken to them about multiple members. It's certainly something we could take back to them. I can't imagine that they would be overly concerned with that. In fact, they'd probably welcome it as being strengthening the committee.
Do this council then want to put forward two representatives from this meeting?
That would be Councillor Hackett for Labour and Kath Johnson for the SNP.
Is that agreed?
Yeah, I'm happy to formally second that.
That's fine, thank you very much. That's agreed. Item 8.9, creating a world-class education system, attainment and achievement, 2017, a report by Dr. Grace Vickers.
Thank you. And committed to the creation of a world-class education system, a seminar was held with elected members and the secondary head teachers earlier this month in order to share the key successes and achievements secured. The purpose of this particular report is to provide an overview of attainment and achievement for session 16-17, and a copy of the full report is filed in Appendix 1. Section 2 provides the background, including information about the national and local benchmark measures called INSIGHT. Sections 2.1 to 2.5 of the report outline the improvements in attainment, but also the next steps planned to secure continuous improvement. Some of the highlights include significant progress in literacy and numeracy at level 4 and 5 by the end of S4, which is the highest recorded level, achieving a 24.4% improvement at level 4 when comparing 2013 with 2017, and a 35.4% improvement at level 5, 2013-17. In terms of breadth and depth measures, Midlothian secured the highest recorded level for one or more hires by the end of S5, which is 4.1% higher than the previous year and 17% improvement when comparing back to 2014-17, resulting in a positive four-year trend of 2.3%. In addition, for three or more hires by the end of S5, again, Midlothian have secured the highest recorded level to date and is 4.3% higher than the previous year and 9.5% improvement 2014-17. The report, however, acknowledges that there is still significant work to be done, particularly in relation to the breadth and depth measures, particularly where we see some dips in 2017, in order to fulfil our aspiration to bring all the areas in line with both the virtual comparator and the national average. And the main report outlines the key actions which will be implemented, including in the appendix the National Improvement Framework Action Plan, which legally we're required to do, and this was the first year of that new requirement. Sections 2.6 to 2.8 outlines the key highlights in terms of wider achievements also, and includes record uptake in the Duke of Edinburgh Awards Scheme, an increased uptake in adult learning, and record positive destination results both for the school leavers' destinations and participation measures. Following this report, we also have permission to share the video which the pupils of New Battle High School have made to express their gratitude for their new school, which they're getting very excited about. And Section 3 outlines the resource implications, and the report concludes with three recommendations in Section 4, which are to note the significant improvements in performance outlined in the report, to note the areas for continuous improvement, and also to congratulate pupils, parents and staff on the significant improvements in attainment and achievements during last session.
Thank you, Dr. Grace. Councillor Muirhead.
Dr. Grace. Thanks, Deputy Provost. I'm pleased to welcome this report as yet another and what is an increasingly long line of positive reports coming forward to this council about our attainment and achievement figures over the last period. Something that I welcomed as education spokesman for the opposition during the last administration, and I'm doing so as education spokesperson for the administration now. I think it's not just about the it's the consistency. What we're getting consistent improvement over a long period of time, which is important. The one thing I would say that I'm slightly concerned about, and it's not actually in this paper, but that we everything that we are doing here is about what we're doing at a local level. You know, it's what we're doing in the schools, what the teachers are doing in the classrooms. And my only concern is that I wouldn't want the regional improvement collaboratives and any initiatives that come from that to divert us away from really making achievements at a local level. And that's one concern I've got, and it's a concern I think that's shared across this chamber with the regional improvement collaboratives. But it's certainly it's a very good paper. I really enjoyed the presentation that came forward from the head teachers at the high schools in Midlothian a couple of weeks ago, it's something that we really, really should be welcoming. And thanks to all the staff and pupils, all the schools for the things that come forward in this report.
Thank you, Councillor Moorhead. Mr. Bowen.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I would echo everything that the portfolio holder, Jim, has said about this particular seminar. I think it's a very valuable innovation by Midlothian. I have to say the enthusiasm of our head teachers came over very, very strongly, and I'm sure that would be reflected also in our primary school head teachers. I think what was nice about the particular seminar were the number of personal stories about putting flesh on some of these statistics, because these statistics are good, and I congratulate Grace and her team for producing the paper, and I congratulate the schools for their achievements within it. But it was the wee personal stories and the clarifications that we got at that particular meeting that I found so useful. So I do hope we continue with this annual event. Thank you, Deputy Provost.
Thank you. Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I'd like to echo that as well, especially thank him for the seminar, because it really did help. It really hammered home the fact that the attainment was going up, and quite considerably as well, which was great to see. I'd also like to add as well that if it's not already been done so, I'd like to invite the Council to formally thank the staff in all the schools for all the hard work they've done. Because it's really important what they've done, and within the Education Department as well. And as well, I suppose I wouldn't be doing my bit if I didn't say that it's pretty simple maths. When you put hard-working staff, an SNP council and an SNP government, you get high attainment. And I hope that Labour continue that tradition, and I'll be making sure that they don't drop the ball on this one. Thank you.
Any members wish to add? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. One of the things I'll just add in terms of risk, I think, again, echoing all the positive comments, I think it's just fantastic, the year-on-year growth of entitlement. But looking at the financial challenges we face as a council, there is a real risk that we'll find this increasingly difficult as years go ahead, and incumbent on all of us to do what we can to focus on continuing these positive outcomes for our children in the county.
Thank you, Councillor Hackett. Can I thank Dr. Grace Vickers for her report, and ask that the Council notes the recommendations, and obviously adding on to congratulate the pupils, parents and staff with improvements in attainment and achievement. Thank you. The item 8.10, which is Universal Credit in Midlothian, 2017, an update from Kevin Anderson.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. The report to Council has been submitted annually since the introduction of welfare reform in 2013. Welfare reform aims to simplify the benefit system and increase the incentives to work. This report focuses on the rollout of Universal Credit Full Service into Midlothian from March of this year. Previously, the Universal Credit Live Service version was in operation from 2015, and that was paid to a restricted group of claimants, whereas UC Full Service, implemented now, is for all claimant circumstances except those of pension age. In Section 4 of the report, the effect on households in Midlothian is noted, together with the impact on income to them and also to the Council. Scottish flexibilities from devolved powers to the Scottish Government are listed in Section 5, and Section 6 references work to establish a Scottish Social Security Agency, as a range of benefits were devolved from April of this year and a further number were effective from this month. The resource and mitigation to support claimants, as well as the risks to the Council, are detailed in Section 7, which also lists the recently announced variations and timelines in the Universal Credit Scheme following the UK budget announcements. In Section 8, Council is recommended to note the activities in managing Universal Credit and to note those risks, and I would suggest an amendment to the final recommendation to Council to agree instead to resume the Welfare Reform Members Group with the previously nominated group members. Thank you.
Members, any questions to Councillor Curran?
Thanks, Deputy Provost, and thanks, Kevin, for this report. Universal Credit. We could probably sit and talk about the flaws of Universal Credit all day. I'll pick up one point, though. Alternative payment arrangements for couples, and this is the option to split payment between members of couples and partners. I think this is an option isn't a step in the right direction when it comes to reducing financial exclusion, which predominantly affects women, but also disadvantaged groups as well, such as people with difficulties accessing banks that we discussed earlier. It was in Councillor Alexander's motion. Financial exclusion can also be a factor when it comes to domestic abuse, and it can make it more difficult for a person to leave an abusive relationship. So while I think it's a step in the right direction, I don't think it goes far enough, and I think we need a system that recognises the rights to an independent income. Elsewhere in the paper, I would just like to acknowledge the importance of the access to digital services for universal credit claimants and also recognise the valued work undertaken by the welfare rights team. I actually considered bringing an additional point to the recommendations about flipping the default position when it comes to the housing benefit element, but I'm happy to take that forward to the welfare rights group. Deputy Provost, just through yourself, I've got a question for Kevin, and it's regarding the delivery of the universal credit training. If members so wished, is that something that could be made available to members?
Certainly, yes, it could. Maybe suggest that one of the initial sessions of the resumed group focuses on the training that's been available to staff and partners.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I'm happy to go with the recommendations as amended by Kevin.
Thank you. Yeah, Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. Echo everything that Councillor Curran said. I could bang a drum about universal credit for the next 3 hours, but really nobody wants to hear that. could I just ask one question? It's quite a technical question about the temporary accommodation. Am I right in thinking that it will be the housing element will now be taken away from universal credit payment, and that is actually going to happen, and those clients will go back onto housing benefit?
Yes, your understanding is correct. The announcement was that housing benefit would be the means of paying housing costs. The date of that and the process of that is yet to be defined, but that's the intention, yes.
Thank you. But they will still remain, obviously, it's that lobster pot scenario that they will still get the other monies as universal credit, but the housing costs will be paid as housing benefit.
Yeah, my misunderstanding, you're correct. The other elements will remain as a universal credit payment.
Thank you.
Any other members got any questions? Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I think this is a really concerning paper and a really concerning topic, and I just wanted to mention a couple of points, particularly in light of the budget and the work that we're about to do in terms of the budget proposals. I am really, really, really concerned about the impact on Midlothian residents as well as the impact on our own council services. In figures that were reported a few weeks ago, it was reported that 9 Scottish councils are spending £8 million undoing damage caused by universal credit, and this council was mentioned in that article to the tune of £1.5 million, both in terms of what that means for rent arrears and the implications that has on our HRA account, but also in terms of our staffing arrangements as well and the provision that we're putting in place to help people. And I think it's really just a plea from me to members that when we are looking at budget proposals and we're thinking about welfare reform staff and libraries and online access, the things that people really need to be able to access this horrible system of universal credit that's been brought in by the UK government and that is absolutely punishing people double-fold, not just in terms of what it's doing to people, but also, I'm sorry, but I'm just a bit taken aback there by the Conservative leader sitting sniggering at the corner at the mention of those figures. I find that really disturbing. But as a point that should be made is that this is impacting on our council finances, and I don't think that that's a laughing matter, not to mention the impact on humans. So I'm happy to end there and make the point, but I'm really disappointed that that point was just disturbed by the Conservative councillors laughing there. I think that's appalling.
Yeah, Councillor Smale.
We were not in any sense laughing. You need to put this in context. I cannot find anyone who thinks it is irrational to take 6 complex benefits and try and make them into one. The principle behind this is that people should be, as far as possible, financially independent. I would have thought the party that speaks always about independence should welcome that as a humanising and dignifying process. You talk about the impact on the individuals concerned. It is obviously the case that when you make a jump like this, there will be transition problems, but they are not necessarily impacting immediately on the individuals because they are hanging on to the money that they would otherwise have to pay us in rent. I therefore would like to ask Kevin Anderson, when is it that we as landlord will start to transition to the managed payment system so that we can have the rent directly as we used to do and therefore control the deficit on the housing revenue account, which I do agree with Councillor Parry is a worry.
The flexibility in terms of direct payment to the landlord has been available to new universal credit claimants from the start of October. The existing predating claimants will have that opportunity from January of next year. Alternative payment arrangements, which have been referenced by Councillor Curran, also give that opportunity for those who are receiving universal credit and are already 6 weeks in debt to their rent arrears. We make that payment and it will take that time period again before we have any reference from DWP whether that request has been accepted, because we get paid on a 4-weekly schedule, so we don't know until that schedule comes in whether that APA, as we term it, has been accepted.
Thank you. Can we now move on to the recommendations? Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Provost. I'll get a longer arm. I just wanted to touch on the comments there from Councillor Smale. I don't think there's a lot of people that would question the need for reform and to consolidate complex benefits that a lot of people find difficulty navigating or even understanding if they qualify. I think what everybody agrees is the problem is when you let a Tory government do it that can't even seem to get through a lunch without something going wrong. This is the key point, is nobody disagrees with welfare reform. What we do disagree with is who's pushing it through. I mean, you just have to ask yourself, these are the people who are responsible for getting this through. Call Boris Johnson and David Davis friends. Simple as that.
I think we'll move on to the recommendations. Do we agree with the recommendations? Thank you. We go into option 8.11, which is parking in Midlothian, a report by Ricky Moffat. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. At the meeting of 7th February this year, Council agreed to submit an application to Scottish Government for decriminalised parking powers, and further agreed that a report be provided when additional progress had been made. In terms of the submission, what we were required to do was to look at our road markings, our traffic regulation orders and the necessary signage. And we were required to have all these checked and amended as necessary, which met the Scottish Government's requirements. Council were advised previously that the most appropriate arrangement for parking enforcement is in conjunction with another authority. And so, similar to East Lothian Council, we are looking to partner with City of Edinburgh and their contractual arrangements. And so in that regard, discussions with the parking enforcement contractor have progressed, and an outline of the detailed costs associated with the optimum level of enforcement are detailed in the report before members today. Information from Scottish Government indicates that the likely start date for the introduction of decriminalised enforcement in Midlothian is April 2018. Council are also being presented today with the Midlothian Parking Strategy document, and that gives a framework for key parking issues, parking policy, strategy implementation interventions and a delivery plan that can be taken forward, and that links in with the regional strategy in that regard. However, the strategy does not assume decriminalised parking powers will be obtained and indeed can operate as a standalone document. So today, Council is asked to agree the recommendations as set out in Section 4 of the report.
Thank you. Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Deputy Provost, and thank you to Mr Moffat for presenting the paper and the strategy today. I think it's, if you listen to folk, certainly in and around the Dalkeith area, as just one example, people are crying out for some parking enforcement. I think this will be really welcomed. Many of us have been around Jarnett Court on a Saturday afternoon, and you see people double parking on, you know, in bus lanes, and the traffic problems that it can cause, and obviously a risk to local shoppers' safety. I think there are quite a number of outstanding issues around making sure that the, you know, it's a balanced budget program, looking at residents' parking and other issues, and I welcome the document, and I might add one other recommendation. Once the decriminalisation has come through, is that, again, we have a cross-party working group to work with the department concerned in looking at the future of not just enforcement, but income generation and other opportunities, particularly with the increasing traffic that's happening across our county.
Yes, Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. There was a few issues in the report that I thought needed to be addressed that weren't suitably addressed, such as, and I touched upon what Councillor Hackett mentioned, that local residents should never be penalised for parking outside their own home. And if their own home is in a town centre, I think there needs to be some sort of caveat to ensure that there will not be charges that affect them, whether it's a permit to allow them to park outside their own home or something like that. I also think we would need some kind of guarantee that this wouldn't suffer from mission creep, that these parking restrictions would be for town centres and not gradually rolled out across the entirety of Midlothian, as seems to have happened across a lot of Edinburgh, with a lot of residential areas suffering from very restrictive parking restrictions, which makes it very difficult for people to visit their friends and family. And thirdly, I think we would need to make sure that that any parking restrictions were reasonable and that the charges were not going to be excessive, because some of the parking charges in, for example, Edinburgh can be highly restrictive for people just going around their ordinary business, such as going in to visit the local bank or the local shops. So I think we need to make sure that the charges would be reasonable. And finally, there is a reference to parking restrictions around schools. Now, a lot of the schools in Midlothian are in residential areas, so we would need to make sure that any parking restrictions around those schools did not affect the local residents' ability to park outside their own homes as well. So those were the points that kind of stuck out to me that I thought needed to be kind of further addressed.
Thank you, Councillor Hardy. If it's recommended approval here today, obviously the cross-working party would be able to identify some of the issues you've just raised. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. I think that's a really sensible suggestion from Councillor Hackett. I was a little bit disappointed about the representation from Midlothian West in here as well. In fact, there's a head and a lone head and a picture of Gorebridge Main Street next to it, which I thought was slightly odd as well. I take on board the points for Councillor Hardy, and I hope that we can work some of those out in the working group, because I don't think that we should certainly be putting people with four-by-fours before people that actually genuinely need parking. In fact, most of the, I think there's been very few contributions for Conservative councillors today, but most of them are focused on talking up people that want to buy houses, talking down affordable housing, laughing through welfare reform and universal credit, and now we have to protect their 4x4 parking. So I'm quite happy to go forward with a working group and think that's really sensible.
Baird.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. Yeah, I just wanted to highlight the biggest thing that you see in this report is a £78,000 deficit. And I think when, obviously, and as every other councillor has mentioned it, that needs to be addressed. If Edinburgh City Council can make millions out of their parking, I think we could at least get to break even, especially when we're also looking at making a lot of severe cuts.
Thank you. Item 8.12, the automated public conveniences, a report by John Blair.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. This report provides further information to Council to allow a decision to be made towards the installation of automatic toilets in three locations. The background is as previously advised to Council in the September report and is detailed in Section 3. Moving forward, the proposals set out in the report are to install automated facilities in Dalkeith, Bonnyrigg and Pennycook, the areas of highest usage. In Lonehead, the proposal is to close the existing facility and utilise the newly opened Paradise Hub. In the Gorebridge area, the intention would be to use the existing leisure centre, meantime until the new hub facility opens in the summer. The financial savings, if the proposals are accepted in a few years, amount to £47,000, assuming that a 20 pence charge is introduced. Accordingly, Council is invited to approve the recommendations as listed in Section 7 of today's paper. Thanks, Deputy Provost.
Thank you, Director. Members, have any comments? Councillor Miller.
Provost, thank you. The public conveniences, to say the least, that there is a need to have proper public conveniences in town centre areas, whether we like it or not, and there is a cost to that. I think that we should be quite happy to agree the principle of looking at putting in the automated toilets. When you look at some of the damage done to toilets and the times that they're closed, and that to repair damage and stuff like that, I think there's a need to do that. However, there really needs to be a full public consultation before we take any decisions on these issues. I think replacing the outdated toilets in some of the areas with automated toilets and that are fine. However, in some of the reports where we're actually talking about some of the distances for the alternatives for people to travel are too much. But I would suggest, prior to us coming to a final decision on this, that there should be a full consultation with the public. We shouldn't have come to that decision first and then go to the consultation. We should go out and listen to what folk have got to say and then come to a conclusion after that.
Thank you, Councillor Milligan. Any other contributions? Councillor.
Hi. I would move against these recommendations. I think that we should keep all five toilets open as they are. I think it's important that they are in the town centres where they are, and moving them out to the hubs is just far too far to go. And I don't know if the savings is actually going to be made. So I think it's important for the town centres and the community and the local people to keep them.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
I agree with my colleague Diane Alexander. Fully automated toilets are horrible if you have a disabled person with you. I have a disabled grandson and we quite often go to Portobello and they're not suitable for changing his nappy and although he's 4 years old, and I wouldn't want families in Midlothian to suffer the indignity of that. Thank you.
Councillor Hackett. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. And thank you for Councillor Johnson for sharing that, because I think that was one of the concerns I had. In fact, in keeping the facilities open as they are, I've heard a lot of feedback from people with access needs that struggle at one of the two of the facilities. And whilst it's important that we do maintain a facility in our town centres, when I was looking through the... how would you call it, the regulations or, you know, the spec, as it were, the specifications of the facilities that have been identified by the director. I could be wrong, and I'm happy to be corrected, but it does pick up on it being DDA approved, and I understand that there's you can have an overrider on the timing mechanism. If there are kind of issues that might be missing, that could be picked up as part of the consultation process, and certainly one of the things we could be doing as part of that consultation is specifically asking groups that support people with disability and access needs in the kind of specifications we'd be looking for from any automated service.
Can I ask Councillor Hackett, are you seconding Councillor Milligan's motion? Thank you. A motion to agree in principle and to do more consultation, and we have an amendment to keep all the toilets open in Midlothian. And we have a mover and a seconder. Can I ask the Councillor Milligan...
I'm going to be very clear on what a move is. The principal, I didn't have a problem with replacing the outdated toilets in the town centre. If the public consultation comes back saying no, they're wanting to keep them, then I'm quite happy to hear that as well. Kath Johnson makes a very valid point, and if there is problems with DDA compliance and stuff like that, that's stuff we want to hear. But some of the toilets at the moment, I don't think are actually fit for DDA compliance and that neither. So, this isn't a principle that we're agreeing we're going to close them or to change them. The principle of a public consultation, and if that comes back positive, then we can get consideration. But we need the result of the public consultation engagement first.
Thanks for that clarity. Councillor Parry.
Sorry, can I just ask, it's just a point further on clarity, because the recommendations B and C in particular are to go ahead with the installation of automated toilets, and C to close Loanheads and Gorbridge facilities immediately. So I just want to make absolutely crystal clear before we agree to go to any public consultation that we're absolutely taking those off the table. There will be no closures made here or otherwise until a paper comes back in terms of a consultation. Is that
100% correct?
Right.
All we're saying is this is what the intentions of the officer are. This is what they would be getting replaced with. Here's how we would deal with that. What do you think? And if it comes back for the public saying, no, we didn't want that, then that's what we'll hear back.
I'm only asking because we had this a few years ago, and I think it was Deputy Provost herself who led a campaign against closing the toilets. So I'm just unsure as to why we've wasted a whole lot of time and money bringing a paper here on closing toilets. Officers have had to go away and give up a substantial amount of time, put together proposals costing to spend near enough £300,000. You know, we've just wasted 10 minutes on that and a whole lot of officers' time when we could have just went out and done that in the first place. But happy to proceed on that basis.
So is the Council agreeing to go out to consultation on this issue? Is that the agreement of the committee? Item 8.13, Midlothian Council Small Grants Allocation, 2018-19, a report by Dr Mary Smith.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. This report sets out the background and process to the allocation of the Small Grants Programme, where grants of up to £3,000 are allocated to applicants who meet the criteria under four headings: developing communities, employability, learning and training, health and physical activity, and poverty. In June 2016, Council, it was agreed that the £40,000 poverty fund would be prioritised to the targeted communities of Dalkeith Woodburn, Mayfield East Houses and Gorebridge. Section 2.5 outlines that in June 2017, Council, it was agreed to continue with another round of the small grants for the financial year 2018-19. The applications for funding are assessed by a panel of officers and partners who score each application against the agreed criteria and ensure that both the organisation and Midlothian Council meet their duties under the Equalities Act. Members will also be aware there is a robust communication plan and support offered to groups to complete the application form. The report sets out the various implications under risk, business transformation, ensuring equalities and sustainable development, etc. The report concludes requesting that the Council approves the grant awards as set out. Happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Provost, I understand there was a briefing for elected members this morning to which none of the Labour group were invited to, which I find quite concerning. So I'm not actually sure what was spoken at that. However, what I do have, when you look in light at some of the other decisions we've been asked to take, and you look at the spend, you've got to ask yourself, should this not be measured against other decisions that we're going to have to take for future budgets? However, I do note the fact that in June, just after the local government elections, a paper was tabled allowing officers to go ahead and allocate this. Again, what I would say here is that we need to find a better way of funding our local communities, and it can't be done in smoke-filled rooms behind closed doors with no political accountability. Absolutely can't. We need to find another way of dealing with that. And when you measure some of these measures in here, we've simply got some small signpostings of what this money is going to be spent on and the in-depth information. There's no in-depth information on grants that have been applied for and they've been seen. And I have one particular problem. It's notable that there's at least one, if not several, community councils missing for that grant. I actually thought we had actually removed that onus off the community councils and says there would be a grant of some. We have a legal duty to fund community councils, and yet, for example, I can't see Poulton Hall Community Council in there, and I suspect some others are missing as well. I just think we need to find a better way to be dealing with this so that there is. We talk about transparency. I'm not sure what the transparency is, because all I've got is the headlines behind some of these issues here today. And I think we really need to find a way in which the communities in this council can make sure that community groups are funded properly. And I would ask that we maybe look for a future report on that. However, having to endorse this today, but I should stress that it's important that we make sure that all community councils are funded to carry out their duty.
Thank you. Any other contribution, Councillor Cassidy?
Thank you, Deputy Chair. I agree with most of what Derek said there. And the Council rely on volunteers and voluntary groups enormously to cut the funding. And if we do cut the funding, it will mean more reliance on the formal services, which are also included in these budget proposal cuts. There doesn't seem to be much foresight into the holistic approach to the well-being and the thriving of Midlothian communities. So I'm a little bit concerned about this, to say the least.
Dr. Smith.
I'm a wee bit confused, Councillor Cassidy. This isn't about cuts. This is about allocations of funding. This is allocations to community groups who've made applications, and we have a strict criteria of which, and it's very visible, it was approved at Council, the whole criteria and the whole process was approved at Council. So this is assessed by a number of people, and then they put a score against the applications, and then they allocate the money accordingly. So I suppose I'm confused by what you were saying there.
I'm just generally concerned at the way that the voluntary sector is getting slashed here, and I think that we're picking on vulnerable organisations that are doing a great job in our communities, and it's going to become more reliant coming back to the council to provide these services, and I don't know if we're qualified to do that, to be honest.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. Last time round we had a wee go at participatory budgeting, and I wonder if there's been any review or analysis of how well that went, and did the money we set aside for doing that, how well it captured the appropriate organisations, or is that a report that we're anticipating soon?
We've actually had a report back to Council about participatory budgeting because we used the £40,000 to attract other funding, and we've had activities in Woodburn, Dalkeith, and we've also had activities in Mayfield, which were really successful at attracting other funding. So the participatory budgeting has been really successful.
As a follow-on to there, do you think we could expand the money we give to volunteer groups to totally to participatory budgeting then?
I think Councillor Milligan has pointed out that there needs to be a different way of allocating the funding. So is this a way that the Council would agree that this is how they want to move forward? But that's something that you would need to bring forward to us. But for us, this was about this amount of funding. It was £100,000, and how we allocated it across the board using the method that was agreed at Council a number of years ago.
Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I think that the last point made there by Mary Smith, that's what this report is. We've agreed the model. We've agreed that funding should go to community groups. I agree with some of Derek Milligan's comments about sort of transparency and other issues, and picking up on some of the other comments about how you involve the community. When I wasn't a councillor, which wasn't that long ago, but I participated in a co-production model, which is where you work with council officers and there's representatives of the community looking at funding applications. That was for a funding stream that no longer exists. In terms of participatory budgeting, my understanding is it's a formula, if you like, being pushed by the Scottish Government, and I think in places that it has its place. I've attended the Dalkeith and Mayfield days, as it were, the voting days, which was around food, glorious food. The one risk with that, and I think this is where the Council, in whatever way it distributes funds to community groups, still has its place. It really hit home for me when I saw a local football club and Women's Aid, amongst other organisations, there bidding, if you like, for votes. And the football club was able to bring all the football players, all the parents, all their friends to come in and vote for their proposal. What was, unfortunate, how many people that use Women Aid services are going to attend these sorts of events, to support their organisation and the services that are on offer? And I think that's one of the inherent risks in participatory budgeting. I think it's something that we should continue to look at as a council and support in our community, but with that sort of awareness that it does have its risks. And as I say, I think there's still a role for the council in directly funding and supporting organisations. And if there is a view, perhaps a council meeting next year, we can debate that issue separately.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. It's just a point on participatory budget, and it's not an ambition or a pie in the sky thing or something that's been pushed by the Scottish Government. In fact, council leaders have signed up to a participatory budgeting framework, which has now been accepted and will look for us to make 1% of our budget available to do issues like that. So actually, I think it's a good place to look at, I don't think we can just say the council decided how it's to be worked out and then that's how we should do it. We are the council, so if we want to change that, we've got the opportunity here and now to change it. So if that's the view that we want to take and you as administration, as leadership, you can do that. That's what you do when you're in administration. So I think that you know, if we're really raising concerns about what's happened here, and it sounds like Derek wasn't happy and similar concerns raised by Councillor Cassidy, then we need to go away and do some work. Perhaps we should start up a cross-party working group to look at actually what parts of the budget we can take into participating in the budget, and because I take on board the point about women's aid, but actually that should come from a different pot of funding. I think participatory budgeting and community participation doesn't mean taking money away from women's aid necessarily, and I was just a little bit concerned about those points and wanted to address them, but perhaps that's a good way forward.
Councillor Hackett.
Sorry, Deputy Provost, just to clarify, Women's Aid chose to get involved in the Food Glorious Food project. It's not how their funding from the council is delivered, and I never suggested as such. And I think this is where I get really frustrated with this sort of interjection from Councillor Parry, where you completely miss the point, or at least know what the point is, and try and turn around to make some ludicrous political point. There is an agreement from participatory budgeting. I didn't say it was pie in the sky. I'm saying it's there, and there are inherent risks in it, and we should be aware of it as a council. This is a separate funding stream. We have a responsibility to support community groups, and we can have a discussion next year. We've got a huge agenda today, and if people really want to have an input, you too can put forward proposals. It's not just down to the administration. We're 18 councillors in here who have an equal responsibility.
Councillor Willigan.
Thanks, Margot. I'm not actually sure where this discussion went to, but I actually completely agree with Councillor Cassidy. When you measure some of this against some of the other decisions that we're having to take here, I didn't sit comfortable with it. However, we have taken a decision and asked officers to go away in June, I think it was, to issue the funding using this. I think this should be the last year that we look at using this model to use it, and I would ask that a future report comes back on how we're going to fund the communities, and that should be broken down, and there should be some professional input to that prior to elected members, because Kelly makes the point correctly that whether she missed Deverdy John or no, but the fact is there's community group funding for essential services, and there's community group funding for community groups that are like say, the gala days, the Christmas lights, all that sort of stuff. And if we get into starting to dissect this report now, by the time we've all declared an interest and left, because we're all involved in some of the groups that are getting funding for that, there'll be two or three officers left sitting in here. Probably some of them would need to leave as well. But the reality here is that there needs to be, I think, a lot more transparency, because we are going to have the voluntary sector asking us, well, why are you funding that when you're not funding this? And I want to be able, and I'm sure all 18 councillors round here want to answer that question, because there have been some uncomfortable questions and uncomfortable points put by the voluntary sector to us and saying, look, we're critical to this, and you need to, and I actually 100% do. So in moving the recommendations, we ask that another recommendation be put in, that we come forward with a further report on how we're going to fund our communities, but mainly as we do acknowledge the significant contribution the voluntary and the third sector organisations make to Midlothian.
Thank you. Does the Council agree to that added one? Thank you very much. Thank you. Item 814, Pennycook Heritage Regeneration Project. Ian Johnson, Head of Communities and Economy.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. Very briefly, this report relates to the Pennycook Heritage Regeneration Project and specifically the requirement to appoint a chair to the project team. Subject to final approval by the two main funding bodies, that's Heritage Lottery Fund and Historic Environment Scotland, it's expected that this major regeneration project in Pennycook will begin in the summer of 2018. Details of the terms of the project are set out in the report, mainly at 2.3. In making the Stage 2 submission to the Heritage Lottery Fund, which is at a final stage, it is important that the Council can demonstrate that it has a project team in place with an appointed chair. A project team has been formed, and at its first meeting back in August, it agreed that the chair of the team should be a Midlothian Ward 1 Pennycook councillor. So accordingly, Deputy Provost, it's recommended here today that the Council appoint a Ward 1 councillor to chair the Pennycook Heritage Regeneration Project team, the terms of which and the constitution of which is indicated in the report.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Has any of the other two elected members from Pennycook wish to put their names forward? Councillor Meetlander.
I'm happy to nominate Councillor McCall. I think normally the protocol is that you can't nominate yourself.
Thank you. We've got Councillor McCall. Have we got any other? Councillor Johnson.
I second that Councillor McCall should be doing this.
Thank you. Any other nominations? No, there have been no other nominations. Councillor McCall will be approved as the chair of this organisation. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Chair.
Item 8.15, Pennycook to Edinburgh, public transport links and rail feasibility assessment. Again, a report by Ian Johnson.
Again, to be brief, Deputy Provost, in September this year, when agreeing to adopt the Midlothian Local Development Plan, Council asked that a further report be brought to Council in relation to a feasibility study for a rail link between Pennycook and Edinburgh. And this report sets out the background to something which has been the subject of consideration on and off since at least 2001. It also notes the current issues of housing growth and other development which impact on the capacity of the A701 transport corridor, and for which there are a number of options to address such transport demands. In order to move matters forward, it's recommended that Council receives a further report on the relative merits of various options to address the transport issues in the A71 corridor, some of which are already part of the approved, adopted local development plan, but also a further more detailed report on the potential next stages of work towards assessing the merits of a heavy rail link between the two centres.
Thank you. Are the members agreed? Councillor Parry.
Yeah, I would just like to really welcome this paper as well. I think it's great, and it's great to see it back on the agenda. I know we've had various discussions around it, but you know, those of us who live in the East of Midlothian have benefited for transport and rail and such like. It'd be great to see that come into the West of Midlothian, and I would certainly very much welcome it.
Thank you. Councillor Hardy.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I'd like to... In the spirit of Christmas, echo the sentiment of Councillor Parry there and say that, you know, that it's fantastic that we're taking this report forward and looking at the feasibility, because obviously in the west of Midlothian, we have seen a lot of proposed housing work, particularly in Pennycook and around Roslyn, and I think it would be great to look at the opportunities of heavy rail to perhaps take some of the commuting pressure off the roads. So, yeah, thank you.
With that in mind, we agree this report. Thank you. Item 8.16, the School Estate Capacity and Pupil Intake Limits, School Session 2018-19, a report by Dr. Mary Smith.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. The purpose of this report is to provide Council with an update on the school estate capacity. The report identifies the requirements for additional school capacity to be provided by August 2018 and informs the Council of the pupil intake limits required for the school session starting in August 2018 and the implications for pupil placement. Section 2 outlines a background linking this report to the December 2016 report and the learning estate strategy in order to ensure that adequate provision of places are provided for session 2018-19. The Council's approach to pupil placement is to provide a place for every pupil at one of their catchment schools and to grant placing requests for siblings whenever this is possible. Where catchment schools are oversubscribed, the pupil placement process reserves places at neighbouring schools to ensure that every pupil is afforded the opportunity to attend a local school. Maintaining this commitment is becoming increasingly challenging with the growth in pupil numbers and we're experiencing and the consequent pressures on school capacities. Pupil enrolment for the session 2018-19 is underway and the schools will complete the registration of catchment pupils in the first week of December. The closing date for receipt of placing requests is the 15th of March and decisions on those requests will be made and communicated to parents and carers during April. The placing request appeal panel will meet in May to consider appeals in respect of placing requests which have been refused. Section 3 outlines arrangements for August 2018 intake. This section lists the schools with the number of P1 pupils residing in their catchment area exceeds capacity.
In addition, the primary schools which are expected to experience pressure on intake in respect of placing requests for August 2018 are also listed. Table 1, Section 3.1 lists these in detail, and in addition, the cap on Lasswade High School S1 intake will remain in place for 2018-19. Section 4.1 to 4.6 outlines the school capacity constraints, and Section 5 outlines the costings which were discussed earlier in the capital plan. Section 6.2 outlines the risk that the additional capacity identified in this report may not be delivered before commencement of the school session in 2018-19, and we will perhaps have to develop contingency plans once the detailed delivery programmes for each school are provided. And Section 7 concludes with the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Any contributions, any questions to this report? We're happy to agree this report. Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. So there are three points on this, because obviously I'm very mindful that this will have a serious impact on a lot of parents and children in Midlothian. The first one, in point two, we have a number of schools that are under PPP contracts. We don't know how much it's going to cost to expand them, or if the contract holders will even allow us to expand them, from my understanding of how that's read. It's just a kind of a blank. Am I right in that thinking? Yeah. The second is in the fourth recommendation, where we adapt Mayfield Library to accommodate three classes. Now, I have my surgeries in that library, and when looking at the building, it seems, of all the things it could be used for, as either a satellite service or as a community asset, it seems like the thing it's least suitable for is classrooms. I mean, the paper talks about how extra windows will have to be knocked in to allow appropriate lighting. The building itself is a big hexagon, you know, it's or an octagon. I can't remember how many sides there are to it. And part of that's, again, it just steeps on more concern. That was also highlighted as well that there's no fire escape in that library. So that will have to also be put in. And on that principle as well, I'd have to say that I disagree with that recommendation. We'd ask for it to be removed, and that we find some another solution to the capacity problem in Mayfield Library. Speaking with community, the people in the community, of all the things that they'd say they'd like to see happen to the old Mayfield Library building, once the library's moved to new Battle, the last thing they want to see is it just be absorbed into the estate. They'd like to have it remain as something for the community to access. And lastly, the 7, 8 and 9 about how this cap will impact. I think it has been covered, but I would like it to be made clear to parents that even if these caps are put in, which I do agree with, they can all be individually appealed and heard at the Education Appeals Committee. And there's no blanket restriction. And I realise that I am putting myself forward for a lot of extra work in that regard, but I'm happy to do it because each case is unique and will need to be heard individually.
Okay. Councillor Milligan.
Sorry, my understanding, I'd ask Mary Smith to clarify for me, the minute you place a cap on a school, once it reaches that cap, it can't be appealed.
The appeals process we outlined, remember when we did the seminar, the training for those who were joining the appeals panel, so you can apply a cap in place, but people can still then appeal that, and then it would be heard. There have been cases where an appeal is granted. We try our best to place people where at all possible, but the appeals process would follow through because that's a statutory requirement. So we place a cap on a school to manage
manage the pupil intake there, but people can appeal. You also see people appealing out with catchment requests. That's what we see a lot of within Midlothian, are out of catchment requests. And what we're saying within the capping in this paper is that because of the pressure on local places, so you see that particularly if I use King's Park as an example, where we may see an increase in appeals for placing requests to King's Park from out of catchment, that we may not be able to grant through that process. Therefore, people would appeal and they would have the right to come and represent themselves to that appeals panel.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. Again, I think it's just important to point out that this issue about the library, and I know there's a lot of strong connection and feeling about the library, but it links directly back to the paper we were discussing around. This was presented in the budget in February this year as future additional savings. And I find it extraordinary that councillors come here today saying, well, we'll defend it, we'll keep it open. That opportunity, I would argue, has been gone back in February. If you wanted to keep it open, you should have had the budget there, you should have included capital money to put in porta cabins and everything else that would have been required to meet the growth of the school, and been upfront with honest with folk. In terms of what I believe was Councillor Beattie's proposal at the time, which was providing a satellite library service, if I could ask Grace, would there be room, if you like, to provide sort of outreach services from the library to the school through the classroom? Is that a sort of possibility, and is that something that's been looked at before?
Certainly, we could look at a range of different provisions. If I use an example, within some of our settings, we do that. Some schools have also looked at different ways that they can assign more books into the community through their PEF funding, for example. So that is something we could look at. Myself and Kevin also meet in terms of library provision for a range of areas. So that's absolutely something that we could take on, and providing more of that and reading challenges within the community is absolutely what we'd want to do, particularly during long summer holidays. We would want to make sure that we've got all of that in place.
Thank you. Any other comments? Dr. Smith.
Thank you. Can I make it quite clear? We need these places for August 2018, or else we're not going to be able to provide places for our catchment children. The library, Councillor Beattie proposed that it would be used for some sort of outreach work. It wasn't quite tied down for children. Well, this is about children's education and being able to provide a place in their local school. So this is about putting classrooms in to extend the classroom space that's available and giving children the place in their playground. So for us, we need to ensure that any decisions that are taken today are taken and moved on quickly so that we've got these places for children. Otherwise, we're at risk of not providing our statutory requirement for August 2018.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Councillor Milligan.
Chairman, with that health warning there, can I actually move the recommendations? We can't be in a position in Mayfield of not being able to provide education facilities for primary school pupils, and if the space is needed to ensure that we have that capacity by August, then we'll have to take the professional advice. So can I move the recommendations in the report?
Councillor Parry.
I just had a question, actually. It wasn't in terms of the recommendations. I hope that's all right. I'm just a little bit concerned that we're setting a precedent here of taking a building and using it. I totally accept the point that we need school provision. But what happens next if we've not got room for a community facility in, I don't know, Dander Hall? Do we shut the leisure centre and turn into that? Surely we should be looking at a variety of other options here. I just worry that this is a little bit piecemeal, and that we're setting a precedent of just, you know, using random buildings because we need provision. Are we going to use the council chamber next? Or, you know, you know what I'm saying? I'm not being specific about using the council chamber. I'm just saying, is there not a better way to plan and bring these things to here than this?
I don't know if you know the building, Councillor Parry, but the Mayfield Library is actually attached to the primary school campus. So that's why it's not a random, it's about what would be the best use of that facility. And the best use of that facility is looking at classroom space. It may be further down the line that we're going to have to look at how we make provision for youngsters, because what we've what we identified in the report, the Learning Estate Strategy in September, was the numbers are coming much higher than was predicted. So we're going to have to be quite creative about how we use things and make sure that we have got spaces for our children in their local community schools going forward.
We have a motion in front of council from Councillor Milligan to accept this report. Do we have a seconder? Thank you. Go ahead with that report.
Thank you. I'd like to move an amendment that 4.2 is deleted.
Do you have a seconder? Can we have the mover of the motion finish that, wind up for the debate? Councillor Milligan.
It's quite clear that the capacity is needed for catchment area children. That's outlined by the director, and we need to move on that.
Councillor Baird.
I think it's exactly as Councillor Parry laid out. This sets a precedent that we can take community assets and put classrooms in them. Now, nobody is saying that classrooms aren't essential, but it's that precedent that sets. The next one that could potentially be is that New Battle High becomes over capacity, even though it's just a brand new building. The suggestion could be then, let's drain the swimming pool and put chairs and tables in there. That's the issue that we're dealing with here. It's not about needing extra space. It's about looking at what's in the capital fund and properly positioning for sustainable growth of the estate. There's plenty of land in that area. There's loads of unused grass. The other issue is as well is that with the expansion of early years in 2020, Mayfield Nursery, which is on the same bit of land, also needs to expand. So it's either come up with a strategy now for that area, or again just piecemealing it, take the library and then take something else for when the, well, actually there's nothing left to take when the nursery has to be expanded.
Thank you, Chair. I think we have a motion. We'll start with the amendment. The amendment from Councillor Baird that the recommendations be accepted, other than the second bullet point in recommendation 4. Can we show of hands in favour of the amendment, please?
6.
And there's a motion from Councillor Milligan that the recommendations in the report be accepted wholesale. Show of hands, please.
11.
To item 8.17, which is the carers strategy 2017-2019, a report by Alistair Short, Joint Director, Health and Care.
Thanks, Deputy Provost. So the report really just sets out the strategy going forward to support carers in Midlothian, and I suppose very much recognises the important and valuable role that carers have in supporting and delivering care right across the county. Very much about our overall aim of supporting people to stay at home for longer and that kind of valuable role that carers have within that. The report highlights the kind of statistics that, in terms of those within a caring role within Midlothian, though we also know that there are many kind of unsighted carers who continue to do the work tirelessly every day. The strategy looks to set out how we can better support carers to fulfil the roles, whilst also actually keeping our carers healthy and well. Clearly, the Council has a strong commitment to carers with the appointment of a carers champion in the Deputy Provost. And I think that's been a crucial role in just keeping it. And I think carers themselves feel that their voice is being heard right across the Council. The strategy itself kind of has four kind of key priorities. and that's to increase care identification and support, improve access to breaks from caring for our carers, looking to reduce health inequalities and financial hardship that we know that many carers report, and also a systematic approach to emergency planning. And certainly we know that carers themselves will carry on their caring responsibilities when they themselves are not feeling particularly well. So part of our work is to ensure that we have a process in place that allows a kind of safe care for the one they're caring for during issues. So the recommendation is to approve the strategy, just pointing out that it has been developed with extensive consultation with carers, and the introduction by a carer into the strategy itself gives a real richness of and difficulties of the caring role.
Thank you, Mr. Short. Can I say a few words regarding my other role as the carers' champion? I obviously welcome this report. We do want to keep people home for longer as humanly possible, but also give support to the carers. The carer system is obviously very heavily dependent on the input of family and informal carers, and with obviously we have to support those people as well. And I do seriously welcome this. And we've listened and we've rethought our priorities for the services, and we can ensure we're providing the best possible support for carers who are very highly valued in Midlothian. Thank you. That over. And can I ask the council, Councillor Johnson?
I too welcome it, but there is a bit in it that gave me a wee bit concern. Young people who have caring responsibilities, they often live in houses that they don't belong, have no say in how they're run, etc. And I think more work could be done with young people to make sure they feel safe and secure in the home that they're doing the caring. Often the home they're in is either owned or tenanted by the people they look after. And I wonder what would happen should that home be lost. What then happens to the young carer?
Can you address that?
There's a fairly significant work stream going on with young carers, and the new legislation that's due to come into force from April really strengthens that role and our duty and responsibility to young carers. I think there is always that challenge by nature of by virtue of the fact that they're a young carer, they have they're not of an age where they would have their own tenancy or their own rights related in amongst some of that. But I think the new legislation really sets out clear parameters. One of the challenges we often have with young carers is about their as recognising that someone is a young carer. Often there's a real sense that people aren't wanting to share the fact that as a young person they have a caring role at home. They're anxious about what that might mean if they're sharing that they're caring for a sibling or they're caring for a parent in amongst some of that role. So part of the work that the legislation is setting out is about finding different ways of identifying that and really working closely with colleagues in education, because often it will be the guidance teachers or people within the school that will recognise that more clearly and for us to look at the different supports. But it very much, I think, with the new legislation, there'll be really good opportunities for us to work really well with that group as we move forward.
Thank you. With that reassurance, we approve the report. Councillor Milligan.
I was fine with just going there, but I think the officers will ask that impossible question, because and I wholeheartedly agree with what Councillor Johnson says here. But if you're a young carer and you're in a council house, then that's fine. You can inherit the tenancy. You can get help getting moved to a more suitable tenancy. However, if it's in private ownership or it's a private rental or something like that, there is problems there. And we need to be trying to look to see, well, can we work with young carers a wee bit better to make sure where they are in that position where they're vulnerable when the tenancy goes, that we look to assess them and make sure they get a more suitable tenancy. However, I would like to make a sincere congratulations to all the time and effort going into this report, and especially the voluntary sector and the volunteers and that who've took the time to help put this strategy together. So I think we should pass on our thanks to the officers and to everybody for this report coming forward.
Thank you, Councillor Milligan. Everyone agree to approve this report? Thank you. Item 8.18, report of the Chief Social Work Officer 2016-2017, a report by Alison White, Chief Social Work Officer.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. We're about to begin a series of papers on social work, cross-cutting social work issues within this. This report is really providing the Council with my annual report in my role as Chief Social Work Officer on the statutory work that's been undertaken on the Council's behalf, and that's across all areas of social work, so adult services, children's services and criminal justice. And it's really an opportunity for us to both refer to some of the challenges that we experience, but also to look at some of the successes and some of those really good areas of work that we have across all of those service areas as well. And it's also about how we work with our workforce in social care. So this isn't, despite it being the role of Chief Social Work Officer, this isn't just about social work qualified staff. This is also across the social care workforce in that general sense, and our commitment to ensuring that we have a skilled and dedicated workforce. The attached report to this really goes through details, covers a wide range, setting some of those context issues. So from the partnership arrangements that we have, it's not just around what the Council does, but how we work really closely in our partnerships around some of this. Some of the delivery landscape that we have, particularly around the new house build developments, what's the impact of that on our service areas, and the demographic challenges that we're facing both in children's services and in that older age population in terms of what some of those demands are going to be for us moving forward. I think what's really critical for us when we're looking at what some of those challenges are, particularly around those demands and the Council's financial situation and the challenges we have to meet the needs of that population, is I think particularly around the principles that we've been embedding across all of those areas about prevention, local accesses to service, and really co-production, ensuring that we're working really closely alongside the people who use our service and their family carers particularly, and third sector organisations who are really central to a lot of the work that we deliver. And I think across the services within social work, we've got some really good examples of the work that goes on in that area. Take through the different strands of the different work that we go on. There is a lot of the work that's talking about some of the statutory responsibilities that we have, but I won't go into significantly details on those because I'm about to present the Community Payback Order report, the MAPA report, and the Public Protection report, so you would potentially get the same information more than once. But actually, there's a real focus on some of those areas, as that is primarily the work that we're undertaking from the social work perspective. I think it is worth referencing the workforce planning and development session. We're very fortunate to have an in-house learning and development team, and we're able to deliver an awful lot of that and ensure that we can meet those basic requirements across all of our services. And you'll see from the section that starts on page 447 around the collaborative approaches that we've been taking to workforce development, because actually social work, social care services are so heavily reliant on the staff in care roles and in the social work roles to deliver that, that it is really important that we have that commitment to supporting the really valuable work that that workforce undertakes. So I would be looking to note the recommendations, which are to approve this report and to agree to us making that report a public report.
Thank you. Any questions to the Chief Officer? No questions? We agree the report? Well, Councillor Johnson.
Oh, I agree the report and think it's really good, and it's sometimes quite astounding how much work social work actually gets involved in, and it's not like a traditional you've been a naughty boy, this is what you're going to do. It's so far reaching, it encompasses nearly all aspects of our life, and the people who are working in all of our social work, whatever department it is, need to be congratulated on their loyalty to the people in Midlothian. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we agree the report? Thank you very much. 8.19, which is the Community Payback Order Annual Report 2016-2017, a report by Alistair Short, Joint Director, Health and Social Care.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is really to provide the context for the Community Payback Order annual report, which needed to be submitted to the Scottish Government. And it's really to ensure that councillors are aware of the wide range of work that goes on as a result of the Community Payback Order work that happens within Midlothian. So there's a level of context in terms of what community payback orders are, what we're hoping to achieve by some of that, and there's elements that we're needing to report on statistically around some of that work. One of the key things around community payback order and one of the real strengths for us locally has been around that consultation and engagement. Now, some of that's with the people that we are supporting, those service users who are the individuals who are subject to community payback orders, alongside the beneficiary of unpaid work services, for us to get a real sense that the work that community is being done under part of community payback order is really having a meaningful impact on the people who live within Midlothian. And it really links to some of that restorative justice and community justice agenda that we're looking to achieve. So the community payback order is also about ensuring that we're developing skills in the people that we're supporting so that actually that risk of reoffending and coming back into that system is reduced significantly, because actually employment and that opportunity to learn skills and develop to get into employment is really critical for this key area. As you can see from the report, feedback from service users and beneficiaries is generally positive. To ensure that we've got a real number of individual placements and have been able to meet individual needs and the works of communities. We continue to look at ways to communicate with the public, the challenging work that clients undertake, and we've certainly been clear about taking recommendations. We've been prioritising some of the areas of multiple deprivation for the work of the community payback order, and we're working through a lot of that very closely within the service. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Councillor Johnson.
Thanks. I think we should approve the report, and I like the idea that it's a re-offending recovery programme, and we can use that time to help people recover from the issues that have caused them to have complex and sometimes chaotic lifestyles. And I hope some of that learning can be used to in our preventative work, so we may not need this in the future. Thank you.
Any other members have a comment? I'd also like to commend the work that's done, because in our local communities, many members I know use the services for the payback order. So we agree this report. Thank you. 8.20, the MAPA Annual Report 2016-2017. Alison White giving the report.
Thank you. This is a cover report for the MAPA annual report for 16-17, which was published on the 27th of October 2017. And this is really for your information and noting, but it's such a critical area in terms of the management of high-risk sex offenders that we felt it was really critical that you got an oversight of the work that's been undertaken, both in a mid-Lothian context and across Lothian borders in that wider context. MAPA was established in Scotland in 2007, and it was about coordinating the response of agencies in the management of registered sex offenders and restricted patients. And in 2016, what we saw was an extension which also included violent offenders who were assessed as posing a risk of serious harm. Part of the work that we undertake and part of this is to evidence the really positive impact of that multi-agency working and the way that we're delivering on this. Actually, the risk of reoffending within this group is lowest across all of the offences categories. So people who are managed through the MAP approach process with that really intensive risk management, multi-agency way of working, we do see one of the lowest reoffending rates across all of the other areas that we would be working alongside. And I think what we're seeing, certainly across Lothian and Borders, for the ninth year in a row, we've had no level three offenders have been convicted of a further offence that would be measurable against these kind of areas. In Midlothian, we did see some further reoffending in a small level. And the numbers, I think what it's clear for us to be talking about is that the numbers that we're talking about are exceptionally small when we're thinking about this number as well. mentioned the extension to violent offenders, and that was extended in April 2006. And to date, we've had one person within Midlothian who has been managed under that system. They have since subsequently been recalled to custody, but they were managed effectively for that period of time throughout that. We did provide a briefing to elected members in September 2016, and in 2017 we've also provided that. It's such an area, a significant area of risk management for the local authority, and it is also referenced in the Chief Social Work Officer report that you've already have. This management of high-risk offenders is really critical for us, and we are asking that Council will note the content of that report.
Thank you. Members have any questions? No, happy to note the contents of the report. Eight twenty-one. East Lothian and Mid Lothian Public Protection Committee Annual Report 2016-2017, a report by Alison White.
This is the final social work report that you'll be getting from me today. So this report is really introducing the annual report for the Public Protection Committee informing Midlothian Council of the progress. Committee is the key strategic group that deals with public protection matters across East Lothian and Midlothian, and we've got real partnership engagement around that. I would say that as soon as this finishes, I am actually going off to the next Public Protection Committee meeting that has been held today. And it's the committee reports to senior officers through the Critical Services Oversight Group, which includes the chief executives of both local authorities and senior members across NHS Lothian and the police. So the committee reports into there to ensure that we've got a real sense of governance and oversight of all of the protection issues. And this area covers across adult protection, child protection, violence against women. It also has some remit across drug and alcohol services and covers offender management within that. There are four subgroups that support the committee, and these are a performance and quality improvement subgroup where we really get into that analysis and scrutiny of the data and the numbers and the figures and what that's telling us about the work that's happening across all areas. We have a learning and practice development subgroup, and that's really important, and that criticality to ensure that we have well-trained staff who are able to really address the needs. And one of the key areas that we've been looking at more recently in learning and development practice is really to look at how we can embed trauma-informed practice, because people that we see across all of the areas in public protection, trauma is often an experience of trauma at some point is often a significant factor for them. So how we can embed that in the way that we're delivering work is really critical for us. And I think it's the opportunity to look at lifespan work as well, because sometimes the people we'll see through child protection will be people we'll see in adult protection in a few years' time. So there are very similar cross-cutting issues that we'll experience. We do also have a violence against women and girls delivery group is one of the subgroups, and that's a really critical area of work for us. Midlothian has one of the highest prevalence rates of domestic abuse. It's such a critical area for us. We work very closely in partnership with Women's Aid, and we've done a lot of work recently to steady and maintain some of the work around that. We've not had some of the continuity of funding for the violence against women that we have for some of the other areas, but work of the committee and the Critical Services Oversight Group has looked to mainstream that because of that criticality and that recognition about the importance of our work in violence against women field. We also have an offender management group, and that's the group that locally we would address the issues that I've highlighted in the previous report. We'll certainly be looking and monitoring around the MAPA and the high-risk offenders and looking at how we can work more proactively to ensure that we're meeting our needs. We do have a public protection team that works across all of those areas, which is a joint East and Midlothian team. And they're based in Musselburgh. I suppose this is the third annual report, and it provides us a real opportunity to reflect and take stock of our activities, and you'll see from the content of the report some of the changes and the fluctuations in statistics over that time, and actually in many cases that increasing demand on our services and that increased recognition of the public protection challenges that we have. And as I've already stated, people don't necessarily fit into just one category, and part of the reason for us collectively taking the decision to bring public protection under one umbrella is that recognition that there is some something that can be gained from us all working collectively in that area. So I would ask that you note the report and the progress made by the Public Protection Committee during 16-17.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comments to the report? Happy to note the report and welcome the progress being made. Thank you. Item 8, 22, Unison's Ethical Care Charter. A report by Alistair Short.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. So this report seeks agreement from Midlothian Council to sign up to Unison's Ethical Care Charter and work and to continue that work with Unison to look to how we modernise the charter to reflect the ongoing developments around integration and the challenges in relation to broader care at home. The charter itself kind of sets out a standard that all councils should be working to in terms of both internal and commissioned services. And to date, Midlothian Council have not signed up to this charter. We've been working with Unison colleagues locally to review where we where our own standards are against the charter. Following our recent commissioning process, it's clear that we fully meet the charter. In fact, we extend beyond what we expect from our commissioned services in relation to the charter. And I think very much it sends out a positive message that within Midlothian we are committed to our care workers being seen as valued and important members of staff and contributing greatly to high quality care services within Midlothian. We are keen that there are obviously challenges in care at home, so we are keen to work with Unison to see how we can use the charter as a way of augmenting and further developing the role of carers within Midlothian. So the recommendation there is for the Council to sign up to the charter and to support the establishment of a review group in order to take it forward to address ongoing pressures within care at home and integration more generally.
Yeah, Councillor Winchester.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. Can I just ask, is there a more up-to-date ethical charter than 2012? Because this seems to be from 5 years ago. I'm wondering, you know, if you could use anything more recent.
So this is the most recent one, and I guess part of our commitment has been that we'd want to take the opportunity to review and update the charter. This is really just us ensuring that we'd signed up to the most recent one before we then took the next stage to work with Unison. And one of the areas that we're looking to keen to work on is not just within a Midlothian perspective, but to be working with Unison nationally and encouraging Unison to work nationally and with NHS Scotland to look at how it can be updated. So the reason it's in front of you, it's the most recent one there, but we do recognise that it requires updating.
Thank you. Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I declare an interest as an employee of Unison. This is something we've been pursuing as a trade union in local government since 2012, so it's taken Midlothian some time to sign it. There is a new charter out from the union on residential care as well, and I think it's really pleasing to see Midlothian Council, well, hopefully, if it's agreed by councillors in the room. And one of the issues, and probably why it's been not just 5 years in the coming for the council here, but the challenges out there, predominantly in the third and voluntary sector, and particularly the private sector, in meeting the challenges of providing care to people in our community. I won't go into too much detail, but some of the stories you hear from folk across Scotland is just awful, the way that some of these companies are meant to be supporting our people. I would move that we recommend the report, but happy to hear from other councillors.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you, Marco. I wanted to say more, but my voice is giving in. I think it's an excellent idea, and we should definitely be there and be involved in shaping the way forward for the care. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other contributions? happy to agree the recommendations. Thank you. We're now moving to private session. You have any